is going to come in for Irving in the corner. Klay Thompson with a beautiful stroke and a three, and the Mavs by two.
A record-setting debut for the newest Dallas Maverick. Good morning, Metroplex. We are live with the Friday edition of Sean, RJ, and Bobby. Absolutely loaded today. Don't go anywhere. That's what TOLO stands for. Turn it on, leave it on, and hopefully you get hooked up in the process as well. Mike McCarthy live at 6:30 today. We have a Dane Cook ticket giveaway. The quarterback facing the Texas Longhorns, Diego Pavia, live at 7:30. We're going to have Mike Tirico play-by-play for Sunday Night Football Night in America at 9 o'clock, and a San Fran Insider before Crosstalk led by Mike Vasek with the KMC Masterpiece. But last night, Chop, one for one with Klay Thompson. Not one for seven.
No.
One for one with the fit as he sets the record for a brand new Dallas Mavericks player in their debut, hitting their most threes in the history of the franchise with six. Mavs eventually blow out San Antonio.
Coop said, you know, he's really, really good and fishing at the corner threes, and the Mavs do that better than anyone. And that wasn't even, like, the number one thing last night. They still didn't even get that going the way they probably want to. When he is wide open, he is still, like, such a threat. And he was able to get shots when he wasn't wide open, which was the impressive thing and the good thing to see, especially that one in the corner off the inbounds pass. We're able to step back, get the ball, and do a really nice shot. But, you know, obviously, the tip out, some of the other passes where he's all alone, he had that one time where he had so much time. He was able to dribble.
Yes.
You know, like, if he is going to get shots like that, well, it is going to be church.
Well, he is. Look, quality of shots is not going to be an issue. It's just going to be, is he on or off that night? And that's right. What Jason Kidd said in previewing the season. It's going to be an 82-game journey. Of course, we saw Luka Russ last night, as I tweeted out, coming up short with a ton of his shots. But more importantly, Luka and Klay did not play together in the preseason. Another positive out of this is you did not need or get a really strong night from Luka. How much wear and tear can this save on Doncic? Now, a reminder, you were taking on sorry-ass San Antonio, even though they looked pretty decent throughout the first three quarters, and they were playing hard, and Wembanyama was pretty quiet until he started just jacking up everything in the fourth quarter. But to me, Bob, this night, it's about Klay.
Yeah, Klay was, he was everything, and very early on, when you talk about, like you said, Luka putting some shots up short, it wasn't just Luka, it was like Kyrie had a shot come up short. You know, PJ Washington was putting up short shots. So when Klay came in and hit those first two, and I think kind of settled things down a little bit and made it so it didn't become this aggressive run while Harrison Barnes is scoring 40 points or whatever it was in the first half. I thought Klay was not only statistically, when you look at the box score, the best player. It felt immediate, the impact. It wasn't, you know, box score scout or anything else. This felt like a legitimate immediate impact for their offense and the way that they operate.
This was Klay Thompson, actually, Pepe, let's go with Cut 7, his post game with Ali LaForce. Reading Klay's mannerisms is going to be interesting throughout the year as well. I think Coop said yesterday, voice of the Mavs, Chuck Cooperstein, he's like, Klay's a sensitive guy. We obviously saw how that ended and played out in Golden State, and just, I don't know, reading his body language, his mannerisms, he was kind of stone cold with Ali LaForce until she brought up Mavs history with him in the post.
Couldn't ask for a better start. I mean, just sharing the floor with Kai, Luka, and the rest of the guys was very special after a hard month of really good work, and to see it come to fruition was awesome. But it's just a small step for where we want to go, but it's something we can build off.
On at least two of your threes, Luka was halfway up the court, not looking. He told the whole crowd it was going in before he even knew it was. What's it like having him as a teammate now?
Well, Luka makes the game easier for not just myself, but everybody in this arena. I mean, he demands, his passing ability, second to none, and I'm here to help him try and be one of the greatest. So we know it's his team, the show runs through him, but it takes a whole squad to get to go where you want to go.
You feel free out there. Is that an accurate description?
I just feel great. It's blue is my favorite color, and Mavs blue looks good on me, so
I'm having a great time, and off to Phoenix we go. But wow, just incredible. It felt good to get this first one out the way and play well. So not satisfied, but I'm happy for what we did tonight.
Hits his first shot, then his first steal, then his first three, and then in the fourth quarter, it was Luka and Klay back and forth, Oprah Winfrey style. You get one, you get one, you get one, you get one. They're up 20, night-night.
And you know, this is after they had squandered quite a decent lead. And, you know, they were really looking like they were putting this thing away mid-third.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, it's down to, five or six.
They were up 14. Luka had the over-the-shoulder ESPN top play pass for the corner three. They're up 14. Spurs have a 13-2 run.
And then it's like, okay, well, now back to work.
Yeah.
You know, and
NBA.
That's right. It is the NBA. You're absolutely right. Wemby is so awkwardly good. It's weird. I don't really know how to explain it.
There was one play, I think it was in the second quarter. Derek Lively played it what I thought looked pretty perfect, and he still just dipped under him and easy layup attempt, and there was no problem. And by the way, last night, I know it's going to be a lot about Klay and everything else. Derek Lively was great last night again. He's going to be so good.
I love him. The passing, you got the energy again from Gafford, but Lively stood out the most to me from a big man's standpoint. 5 of 18 for Wemby. 1 of 8 from 3. He ends up with 17 points. 4 of the 5 Spurs starters had 17 or more. Obviously not enough. Luka ends up with a sneaky 28-10-8. just like, how does he have 28 points? That makes zero sense. I thought they kept him in late for the conditioning. They're like, no, you're going to run. We got to get you back in shape here. And Klay ends up with 22 points. Jaden Hardy had a very nice night with that new contract, providing a spark with 11 points, hitting three threes.
Yeah, I felt like that first three he hit, I don't know the exact number, but it felt like they had missed like 8 shots in a row or so. And I don't think it was that bad, but they were shooting awful last night to start that game. There was a point early on early in the second quarter, they were shooting like 27%. It was bad. And I mean, they got up 102 shots last night. They shot 42 for 102. That was 16 more shots than San Antonio even got up. So it was big when Hardy came in and made his buckets. Klay was doing what he was doing. You were getting some stuff from Derek Lively, the big dunk and one that he got, which kind of got the crowd all energized and gave him the lead for the first time since, like, it was 4-3 or whatever it was. But, I mean, this to me felt like a really good kickoff game in terms of being able to say some things you wondered about: Lively growth, Klay's fit, everything else. That all got checked off. The stuff that didn't go as well is stuff that I think you're just like, that's rust. That's going to be fine.
Only thing I did not get checked off of my Mavs list was Najee and Grimes. I didn't really notice them whatsoever at all. Now, there's going to be some dirty work stuff that you're going to associate with them, but a combined 4 points on 2 of 12 shooting with the new guys coming off the bench. That's the only thing I really did not get.
You know, you're not going to get everything in one game necessarily. No. I was thinking the bench. Now, the bench didn't put up a ton of points. I thought the bench, though, they're a very deep team. Like, there's a lot of guys on this bench that can go for 15 on any given night. And we didn't see that last night necessarily from
Dinwiddie. He played 3 minutes.
I mean, you got.
I must have switched off the game when Dinwiddie was in. I didn't even notice it either.
So, I mean, they got a very, very deep team. Boy, Bobby mentioned 102 shots. I just went back and looked. The Utah Jazz in the NBA Finals against the Bulls got 65 shots off. That's 50 more shot attempts in one game.
We had controversy to end Monday Night Football. The Dallas Stars making it 2-for-2 in DFW, and Dak and Lamb not on the same page again. All that before Mike McCarthy Live at 6:30, a loaded Friday. Don't go anywhere, getting you to your weekend as quickly as possible with the 6 a.m. Club on the Fan.
Vikings bring 3. Stafford well protected. He drills one right side end zone. Caught! DeMarcus Robinson with his second of the half. He flings it into the stands, and John Matthew Stafford has 4 tonight.
Wow. Thought we were going to get a Bible verse in there as well on Rams Radio. Pump the brakes on selling. As Herb Street said last night, 3-4 with a win over the Minnesota Vikings, a lot different from 2-5. Matt Stafford throws for 4 touchdowns. He had one really bad Bobby Belt interception. It makes me think of Bobby versus Wolchuk, but he threw 4 touchdowns, and man, the world looks a lot different with Puka, Nacua, and Cooper Kupp out there, and the LA Rams, very impressive, beating the Vikings 30-20. This was a great game, especially early on, ending with a very controversial, well, not a controversial, it was a butchered call, terrible refereeing with a face mask on Darnold that should have kept their drive alive.
I don't think we should be reviewing penalties, but I do think you should be reviewing penalties that are objective, and that's an objective penalty. It's not a hold. It's not a pass interference. You either grabbed the face mask or you didn't. You can make a reasonable argument. No, that wasn't pass interference. That wasn't holding. You cannot make a reasonable argument that it was or wasn't a face mask. It either was or it wasn't. And for that reason, I do think they need to adjust that and tweak that a little bit. That said, you know, you're already in a position where you're down. You're down 8.
Yep.
Game wasn't won or lost in that singular play. The Rams played a really good game. It was a must-win game for them, for their season. They might have sold. They absolutely might have sold. And now, if you look at it and you go to the schedule, the number one thing, you're going to have Miami, who may or may not have, you know, their season doing anything anymore, because we don't know what Tua is going to be like when he comes back.
Well, they got Seattle before that.
But then they had the Patriots. That's a very winnable game. The Saints, that's a very winnable game. The Jets, very winnable.
Yeah.
You said Sean pumped the brakes on selling. I thought you were about to tee us up for a segment on why we should all still believe in Minnesota. Because that's my biggest thing coming out of that game last night, is I'm starting to get concerned. This is a couple games in a row now where people are looking like, oh, yeah, we got the Flores defense figured out.
And Darnold started off well. Like, this is 14-14, back and forth. I saw enough big-time throws from Sam where I'm like, I'm still good on Darnold. But then they went like 5 straight drives with nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
No, it looked like one of these games where, okay, we're going to get just high scoring back and forth. And I mean, it's still relatively high scoring given NFL standards lately. But this is something where they kind of were, their calling card of how they got to where they were as a legit NFC contender was, this defense has been so great.
Yeah.
And you look at the last several games, they give up 29 to Green Bay, 31 to Detroit, 30 to the Rams. They've given up almost 400 yards in back-to-back games. It's starting to leak a little.
Well, let me give a little bit of advice for you to win your barroom arguments. Don't go too loud bragging today if you were selling Minnesota because you thought that the Rams had a schedule. Let me give you this that the Vikings are about to recover with.
Write this down.
Colts, ooh. Jags, Titans, Bears, Cardinals, Falcons, Bears, Seahawks. Now, there's 3 in a row there, at Jacksonville, at Tennessee, at Chicago. But Colts, they'll be favored. At Jacksonville, win. At Tennessee, win. At Bears, yes, the Bears are more interesting. Minnesota will be favored. Cardinals, they'll be favored. Falcons, they'll be favored, even though maybe closer matchup. We don't know what Atlanta's going to do every week. And then Chicago, 7. That's 7 in a row. They'll be right back on track. Do not sell, record-wise, Minnesota. Yeah.
They could be 12-2.
Before you get to Green Bay, like that game that you're talking about, those last 2 at the end of the year, they don't play a team that, from the cumulative power rankings we're doing yesterday, they don't play a single team that's in the top 10. And so it's all teams that are in the bottom two-thirds of the league, essentially, and that sets up, I mean, that would set up really well for them, you would think.
You would think, but then again, last night they played a team in the bottom two-thirds of the league. So
true.
That's, and now, granted,
with no weapons. Everyone hurt.
Yep. Granted, yeah, you got that, and you know they stood up Matt Stafford. They're getting healthier. The Rams were,
like, I'd pick the Rams against the Cowboys tomorrow if you told me Kupp and Nacua are out there.
Yeah, no, I think that's
and
totally
it was DeMarcus
fair.
Robinson who ends up as the big dog on the night, even though Cooper basically had the big 39 conversion. But yes, obvious clear face mask where Darnold was grabbed in the end zone. He should have gone off about that more. I was like, you gave that up too easily, that argument. You just were too passive about that. But that is Thursday Night Football on Amazon. Mavs made it 1-for-1 in DFW. Stars 2-for-2.
right by the door to the Bruins bench. Here's Tyler Seguin. He shot. He scores! Seguin joins the fun in Boston. Three power play goals this period, and it is 4-1 Dallas.
Victory plus and the power play was a humongous weakness heading into this one. They go into the home of the Massholes and beat down the Bruins 5-2 with three in the second period.
And how about, you know, the start for Boston of the year where a couple of years ago they were on a record pace, and now all of a sudden they're getting out of the gate. And they're really, really struggling. And the Stars took advantage of it. It's not necessarily who you play. It's when you play them a lot of times. And Boston's struggling. The Stars are not. And the Stars continue to be a really, really hot team to start the year.
Go Stars, baby.
There's legit Stars excitement, it feels like, out at when we were at Richardson Bar and Grill yesterday. A lot of the listeners were talking Stars.
Last night when I tweeted, how are you balancing the remote control? It was Mavs. And then the other response was... I'm going with the team who actually wins in DFW with a real front office and general manager. No, not the Rangers for sure. Definitely the Dallas Stars. Three power play goals in the second ties a team record for the most in a period since they moved here in 93 per Gavin Spittle. And Gavin thought it was their best effort, especially since it was their first win in Boston since January 2018.
6 years.
2018. Good job with the math,
all right,
RJ.
Look at that.
Spits and Suds podcast coming out for all your hockey love.
Yeah, it was the whole vibe yesterday, like I said, when I was talking to listeners, there was one person who sat there and that's all they wanted to talk about with me was Stars.
Oh.
And I was
they
like,
must not listen to the morning show.
Yeah, I was just like, ooh, yeah, you want to talk about my golf game too? Yeah. And I was not a lot. But it was a listener who actually had come from California and watch the Kings and stuff. He's like, they've actually made me a Stars fan. Like, I don't even cheer for the Kings anymore. I just love watching them play hockey.
The way to hit us up here on the show, 877-881-1053. 877-881-1053. Did he defend us and our employment to Jerry Jones? What he had to say about Bobby Belton, the way he dresses at Cowboys practice? How the heck do you scout this game with all the injuries? And are the tours in Frisco a problem? All the questions for the head coach of America's team, Mike McCarthy, joins us live on Sean and RJ next. Good morning, Metroplex. It is now time for the Mike McCarthy Show every Friday at this time, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. I'm Sean Treif alongside RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider Bobby Belt, joined by Coach. Good morning, man. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. God, it's good to hear your voice.
That's thrilled.
What do you guys? I can't even say it with a straight face. What have you guys been up to?
Surprised to hear from us, huh?
Okay, hang on. When you first heard about or saw, did you go, the idiots in the morning? It had to be these fools.
Huh? Oh, no, I just know we have such a great show, and I think, you know, sometimes... You know, other shows try to get competitive, and, you know, and they try to upstage this remarkable session that we have on Friday. So I get it. It was a good attempt. I mean, you guys got some national, exposure out of it. So I don't know how much you paid Jerry for that, but that was a smart move on your guys' part.
No, Mike, Jerry pays us.
That's right.
You got it.
Yeah, I think I heard that too.
I was most offended. Not that we were football dummies. Not that. We're paid. I was most offended that he goes, I think Mike has a show. I know I have a show. Steven has a show. Yeah. I'm like, damn, Jerry.
Fridays, man.
Fridays at 6:30.
Come on. Act like he don't know we have a show on Friday. I mean, everybody's pulling over in their car right now. They just can't wait to go on.
Coach, that's not even the best thing that I wanted to go over with you. I heard that you noticed someone the other day in 90-degree weather at practice wearing a sweatshirt and a hoodie. Do you recall that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's my look. It's my look. What do you want?
I mean, it's the executive workout. It's a smart move. I get it.
The executive workout? I like it.
Bobby just wanted to smell like the whole Cowboys locker room after practice. What happened, Bobby? How were you? How was Mike jarred?
Mike was just walking on the field, and he goes, you all right? Why are you wearing a hoodie? Because it was almost 90 degrees, and I did have a bright yellow hoodie on. But I came straight from the station. I was just running straight over to practice.
Yeah, so. You can't wear a T-shirt underneath a sweatshirt or have another shirt in your car.
No, absolutely not.
Especially where you were standing, too. I mean, it gets hot down, in that end.
Yeah, it's beaming off of the building there where we're getting all the sun reflection.
Well, we know he's an attention whore coach, so that's his way of staying.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's what it was. Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105.3 The Fan. Coach, how tough is it to prepare for a game like this? How much scouting goes out the window with all the injury questions that are out there on both sides, but obviously you guys trying to figure out San Francisco with all these question marks?
I wouldn't say it goes out the window. I think, you know, clearly, you know, it's you are who you are as far as what you believe in the approach to the game. So, I mean, the way they, you know, line up on defense and offense and, you know, conceptually how they're going to attack, you know, in each and every situation, there'll definitely be some similarities. I mean, it's always a variation of something that you've done, you know, that's part of your foundation. So, you know, the biggest thing, I think you've already made the point, is just make sure you educate and get as much film on the individuals you think are going to play. So, and I'm sure they're doing the same with us.
Coach, Belichick has always talked about, you know, the stages of the season to develop and figure things out, but the stages of a game. Do you approach it the same way, like first quarter feeling out, second quarter adjustments, a quarter by quarter kind of sparring that takes place? And does that take place even more for a game where both sides are playing a lot of backups possibly?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's clearly, you know, not only the way you play the game, but it's the way you train. You know, like, for instance, this morning, you know, I'm sitting here working on the, you know, the first 15 because, you know, our Friday schedule is called Fast Start and Furious Finish Friday. So we really emphasize the beginning of the game and at the end of the game. So because those are two important, obviously, parts of the game, that, you know, going off to what you've already asked. And what we talk about is the ebb and flow of every game because, you know, all the plays and all the situations in every football game are the same. It's just a matter of what order that they come in, and that's why, you know, every single game is never the same. So you got to be in tune with the ebb and flow of the game because there's things that go on early in games, and, you know, your instincts and awareness to anticipate that, and then you have the ups and downs throughout the game, and then when you get down to the fourth quarter, I mean, there's some situation-specific keys that you have to be on top of, you know, especially, you know, the score of the game, obviously, the timeouts, you know, where you're at on the field, the momentum, and you got to be able to apply all the things that happened during the course of that game to, you know, go win the thing in the fourth quarter.
Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Coach, there's a note this week from NFL Research that said San Francisco runs, it's either the tightest or the second tightest formations on average in the NFL, and that you guys run the widest formations on average in the NFL. Could you just explain in whatever simplest terms there are, the schematic thought behind running such a tight formation versus running things a little bit wider like that?
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, I'm definitely aware of the statistic. I think it's like anything, they're measuring the alignment of your number one receiver on each side of the ball. I think just like anything, I think if you break those type of statistics down even further, you know, A, based off situation, B, you know, the situation in the game, you know, whether it's first and second down, 2 minute and so forth. So, you know, I'm aware of where, you know, we've been high in 3-by-1 and 2-by-2 standard formations, which is a full spread formation that's, I think, more reflective of the amount of 2 minute offense that we've been in. But also, I think the incorporation of how you attack the perimeter blocking has a lot to do with it. So, you know, their run game in the first and second down is more of a two back and things like that, where we've been more one back. So you look at all those factors, but really the statistic is purely off of the alignment of the number one receiver on each side of the ball.
Mike McCarthy joining us here, 105.3 The Fan. Look, it's no secret that y'all have struggled with them a little bit, to say the least, over the last couple of years. How much of that is their players versus their scheme? Like, how can you differentiate between the two?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. I mean, you have to, you know, because, you know, some players play better in certain schemes. I mean, stating, you know, the obvious there. But, yeah, they do a really good job, you know, schematically sticking to the, you know, sticking to what they believe in. Even on defense, they've gone back to more of a 2021, 2022 identity as far as what they're doing schematically than what they did last year. So what they do, they have excellent players. They're well coached, and you know that's a tough place to play. So it's a competitive game that we're really looking forward to. And I feel strongly about the way our guys have come off of the bye week. They've been very, very accountable and engaged into the things that we need to really focus on. And we had a hell of a practice yesterday. So felt great watching the tape. Felt even better coming off the field yesterday. So. You know, we just got to keep it about ourselves, and that's the way we have always operated, and just got to continue to improve because you know we're still green in some areas of our football team. We just got to keep working.
Kansas City did a nice job last week against them, and Spagnuolo's done a really nice job against the Shanahan system for a while. What does he do differently to dial up plays that really kind of confuses them and puts them in tough spots?
Well, I mean, that game definitely was a slugfest there. It was the first quarter or two, so and then it kind of changed in the second half. Just going back through the game, but no, I thought they did a really good job up front. You got to own the line of scrimmage, in every game, and it's definitely the case against these guys. I mean, they're built up front. That's where it starts. Offensively, as we look at their defense. This is a defensive front that there's a lot of value that's put on there, and they play to it. Line movement is something that they do a lot of, and I think it's something that we need to be very conscientious of offensive line wise because we've seen a lot of it this year. And I think as far as Kansas City, I thought they did a really good job of owning the line of scrimmage and really keeping their run game under wraps. It starts with the run. You have to stop the run against San Francisco because everything comes off of that.
Coach, you talked about how you feel like you guys have had a good week of practice, had a good practice yesterday. It feels like there have been, like you mentioned, the tone and vibes around the locker room and everything else seem really positive and upbeat this weekend or during this week. And, how you've seemed really confident in the mode of attack and the plan moving forward coming out of the bye week. How during that week that you guys have off, how much are you reasonably able to get done? How much are you reviewing? How much are you looking back versus looking forward? What does that, process look like that has given you guys so much confidence, it feels like?
I tell you, that's a hell of an observation, especially, you being, potentially having heat stroke. I think it's like every bye week. I mean, it really is so much you can do. We took Monday, and it was all about self-scout. I mean, it was the opportunity to go back through, all the pros and cons, offense, defense, and special teams. And then the other part was, we had the ability to do our cross-the-hall processes, which is, very beneficial for the players. It gives them an opportunity to get a second opinion of sorts from the opposite side of the ball, coaching-wise, and you're really hitting a lot of those same, topics just from a different angle and from a different communication platform. So, I think we did the best we, possibly could in the time frame. The coaches put a ton of time into that process. But then when they came back, we ended the day Monday moving on to San Francisco, to get ahead of it. And then really when you get back on Wednesday, you got to get into that normal flow and get ready to play the game. So it's been a good week so far.
Coach, you mentioned a little bit ago you were working on the first 15 right now. And I know we've gotten questions before about NFL teams scripting the first several plays on offense. When you look at that process, what in general are you guys looking to accomplish with those first 15 plays? Do you ever reach a point where you say, hey, we have certain rules where we break away from these first 15, or is that a hard and fast rule? Like, we're committed to this and this is what we operate within.
Yeah, I think it's like anything. Everybody, you grew up learning a system, in this league, but then you do it how you feel best fits you and in your football team. I've always put together the top, it's actually the top 25 thoughts for first and second down, and then I get into the top thoughts for every situation. I think it's just real important anytime you can bring clarity to the initial, starting line of every game so the guys can really lock in. This is what he's thinking first. Going back to the question about the ebb and flow of a football game, it's just like anything. You want them to anticipate calls, and I think it really starts for me and Dak Prescott on Thursday night, because we'll sit here and go through the whole call sheet, and there's not a lot of dialogue on things we don't agree on, because I've always felt if you're working throughout the week with the quarterback hand in hand, and it's why I try to spend every possible minute I can in the quarterback room, is, you know, you guys are seeing the game and you're seeing the plan of attack very similarly. And I think that just points to a higher understanding connection throughout your offensive game plan and preparation process. So, I just think it gives guys clarity. And in the old days, you used to do the first 15 on Saturday night. And, and I think what you learn when you're coaching a young team has been my experience. I was like, hell, I'm not waiting until Saturday night. I'm going to get to them Friday morning so that we can practice it Friday and Saturday. So that's been my process for a long time.
Coach, Brock Purdy said something interesting this week. He said that he doesn't call audibles at the line of scrimmage, that the answer to what the defense presents is already baked into the play. What do you think about that take, that philosophy, and also, like, how long for you do you go before you give the quarterback that autonomy to call those audibles?
Well, no, it's the same from our that's how we do it. Also, I think that's how most people do it. You're chasing looks, you're chasing matchups, so the majority of your plays, have a second option built into it. Yeah, we don't, there's very few just pure black and white audibles that, that you go to, because, we call them adjustments, whether it's a protection adjustment, a run game adjustment. So you have to have adjustments, on everything you do, just because you're especially, you're just seeing more scheme today than you ever have, particularly in first and second down. It used to be more your adjustments and audibles were more third down and situational, because it's just like anything from the offensive side of the plate. Is the first thing I look at on Monday is the defensive coordinator is where does he spend his time, and some guys spend more time on first and second down, some guys spend more time on third down. Historically, people always spent more time in the third down and the situationals, but those trends have shifted. That's why it's important to be on top of the trends and patterns of the National Football League, because it's always evolving.
Mike McCarthy here on the Friday edition of Sean and RJ 105 through the Fan. Coach, the guys addressed it yesterday, this big article coming out about the tours in the facility. Are the fan tours a distraction, in your opinion?
No, I think it's like anything, and I think just having the experience of working in other organizations, living in other cities, and a lot of our guys, this is all they know. So, and I think you have to be aware of that too. But every place has things about it that that are just part of the organization or part of the city. In Green Bay, you better have a big ass coat for 3 months. So and there's a lot of positive things there. It's, you can go through my opportunities in the league, Kansas City, New Orleans, and San Francisco. Every place has something. But I don't think so. I think it's just a part of our, it's part of our environment.
How many times in your life have you served on jury duty?
Zero.
Zero.
So far, but. We'll see. Maybe someday. Just when you think you've seen it all in this league, something else happens. So,
hey, Coach, you said this week that you were going to check on all the bad plays that you guys run. Have you created your PowerPoint at this yet?
That's called a filibuster, guys. or a no answer, whatever category you want to put that in. So, yeah.
Coach, thank you for having our back, demanding that we stay employed, and checking Bobby's hydration levels. We love you and we appreciate you. Good luck Sunday night.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
You too, sir. Mike McCarthy, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys.
Boy, they are loose this week.
Yeah. They are. I'm surprised.
Good.
Because they typically haven't been.
Loose is a sign of comfort, like confidence.
Yeah, it's something where when we've gone into the locker room in previous year, last year, for instance, they were locked in, but there was a weight. Like, you could feel it. Like almost a sense of, if they lose this game, this would do a lot of damage to them. They feel, I don't know if it's just they feel like, oh, there's an injury situation, or, hey, what do we got to lose coming off the Detroit game? But there is this sort of free perspective that they seem to have of just like, we're good. We're just going to go out there. We're going
to
play football.
Every team that has had to get over a hump in sports has had to like hit rock bottom first, you know? And you see with the Red Sox are down 0-3. The Colts are down 21-3. We've seen it, right? We've seen it a million times. And after that, you've got nothing to lose. When you're down 3-0 in the league championships, you have nothing to lose at that point, right? You play free, you play loose. Maybe that's what they are. Who knows? Like, where could they go? Where lower could they go than that Lions game?
True. Mike McCarthy on fire the last 3 weeks here on the morning show. I found it funny. A lot of these media members, when he had his presser the other day at 9, they're like, oh my gosh, Mike is a morning person. Yeah. Yeah. You listen to 6:30, Jera, right here every single Friday. So the
8:30 or 8:40.
Yeah. The players, much to the delight of Kevin Hagman, taking his crosstalk shots of replaying stuff. The players responded to the fan tour topic yesterday. Dak Prescott with a very lengthy, detailed response.
I mean, for once, is all I know. I'm not going to let a couple of people touring the building distract me. I'm present where I am. I think, simply honestly, I feel like it's an excuse. What's the difference in you guys coming in the locker room and talking? You know what I mean? Honestly, we'll get about that too, and I don't get that. I mean, it's being a professional, some things you deal with. Obviously, I guess the nature of this organization, you know, the tours are probably 10 times more than other places if the other places are doing them. I think some do, right? I mean, no? Well, okay, there you go. Capital.
Some do.
Yeah, some do. But I guess, you know, passing up the guys, I mean, you know, yeah, you've got to embrace it. I mean, honestly, to me, you can walk by and you can have a negative mindset about it and allow that to ruin your day, or you can, you know, be thankful that you're an organization that people want to see. And, you know, for me, it's just easy to say what's up, wave, and keep walking. Obviously, they can't talk to you, so I think that's where I've heard, right? You feel like a zoo animal. Well, it's like, you know, sometimes, yeah, I bark back and I say, hey, and, you know, you just keep rolling. So a lot going on that I'm not going to allow a couple of people through the workplace. There's people on the other side of the building that you don't necessarily know. Is it a distraction when you're grabbing your plate and they're grabbing theirs? That it's easy to focus on what you want to focus on if that's your mindset.
Is that a difference between winning and losing?
No.
That has not played a role in
the tours?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think so. Then, I mean, if that's the case, then the crowd's a distraction when you get out there. So, I mean, it's the NFL. It's a business that those exact reasons are the reasons that this game is entertaining, that people want to watch it, that you have the fans that you have, and you can create the relationships that, no, I mean, if you're distracted by that, then you're distracted by the fans in any arena you get into.
What a great answer. Of course, the guy who's going to give a similar answer is the one who's on the same page every week with his quarterback, Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, on the tours.
Do you see the tours as a distraction?
Sometimes. That's all I'm going to say.
Whoa.
And then he walked off.
Sometimes.
This is the end of his media.
Sometimes. Were you out there for Lamb?
No, not yesterday.
Okay. Well, I heard there was another 5-second answer because I'm more interested in hearing CD's reaction to Troy Aikman's criticism about route running.
We just got to be better overall. So,
do you agree with his assessment or?
Next question.
What was that?
Next question.
Next question. That's a no, I think. I believe it's a no.
Oh, he did not sound happy yesterday.
No.
No, he's usually, and that's the question about the tours. That was the most interesting one to me because he answers it, but there was no smile. Like he goes, sometimes I'm going to leave it that. Just very much wanted to leave it on a serious tone.
Well, I'm like, okay, his ending on that, is that more about like, I'm not going to tell you how stupid and unnecessary the tours are, or I don't feel like talking anymore. I just don't want to talk.
No, I mean, he was being wrapped. So right before the question came in, PR had just said, guys, last question, he's got to go. So I think for him, he was just like, we're not getting follow-ups here. Sometimes, yep. And that's all we're going to say about it.
Ben DiNucci tweeted, I'll never forget when I would work out on Tuesday mornings and have people tapping on the weight room glass like I was supposed to do something cool on command. Definitely a different business structure inside the star. So there's DiNucci. Everyone giving different different opinions. Some people backtracking. Some people saying, no, the person who wrote the article did not get my quotes correct. Back and forth.
Well, and also, like, you know, which quotes did she get differing quotes from other players and not use them, right? There's all of that that's baked in there. You know, at the end of the day, what I got from those two quotes, one from Dak, one from CD, is that Dak Prescott is fit to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and CD Lamb is not fit to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. And the good thing is he doesn't have to be the quarterback. If the quarterback is comfortable, then generally the entire team is comfortable.
Yeah, and I think what you also see there is 9 years of experience here in Dallas, and of course, Chop, 4 years of experience in the SEC.
That's right,
and
where it just means more.
Just basically 13 years of NFL the brightest spotlight.
Yeah. Are Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal hating on Klay Thompson and the Dallas Mavericks' debut? And we'll start getting you ready for the World Series Game 1 tonight, along with a Dane Cook ticket giveaway all around the corner here on Sean and RJ.